Hello there, true believers. This is Head Speaks, a proud member of the Headcast Network family of shows. As usual, I am your host, Aaron Moss, aka Head. This is my mostly monthly Headcast, where I talk about comics, movies, role-playing games, TV shows, and anything else geeky that I want. So sit back and enjoy the ride. Let's begin. Hey there, true believers. This is Aaron Moss, aka Brotherhead, coming at you. And I've got episode 49 of Head Speaks. I know due to technical difficulties at the house, I didn't have an episode last month. I apologize for that. Hopefully I can get this corrected and bring you monthly episodes like I plan on. But occasionally things happen. So let's not waste any more time. Let's get right into our first segment for the day.
Speeding bullet.
In the great hall of the Justice League,
Spider-Man and his amazing friends.
The Justice League of America versus the Legion of Doom. This is
What's in Head Long Box.
Dedicated to truth, justice, and peace for all mankind.
So yes, this month in What's in Head's Long Box, we're going to carry on with our look at the Armageddon 2001 crossover. I've been having a special guest every month. I had special guests lined up for this month. I had a special guest lined up for this month, but things kind of fell through. We had some delays, and things just fell through at the last minute. So instead of making you guys wait another month for this episode or pinning something else out, I decided this month, for the first time in a while, I'm going to go solo on this as we look at the next episode or next issue of the Armageddon 2001. This month, we're going to look at Hawk and Dove Annual Number 2. So bear with me as I handle all this by myself today. But let's get started. Hawk and Dove Annual Number 2. Cover date was 1991. The on-sale date was June 4th of 1991. Cover price was $2. The writer was Barbara J. Kiesel, a.k.a. Randall. The pencilers was Kurt Swan, Gabriel Morissette, Kerry Gamble, Paris Collins. Inkers were John Statham, Charles Burnett III, and Robert Lewis. Letterer, John Costanza. Colorist, Michael Thomas. The editor was Jonathan Peterson. And the coverage on this one was done by, penciled by Kevin McGuire and Jerry Ordway. And our synopsis, before I get to that though, real quick, the credits all, as usual, came from Mike's Amazing World of Comics, great website. The synopsis is from me. Our boy Wave Rider is still at it. This time he touches Hawk. In this future, the Peacemakers are arresting Hank Hall, who is Hawk's real identity, who is a fellow Peacemaker at this point and has been suspended. Hank, as usual, pushes things until one of the Peacemakers shoot him in the back, putting him in danger, allowing him to say, "Hawk," and change into our hero. Hawk takes out his fellow Peacemakers, saying that Hank Hall is dead. Reinforcements are called in as Hawk jumps out a window, trashing a Monarch statue. Monarch shows up, surprised that Hawk is still alive and not dead like Dove and the others. Hawk reveals that he has more power than he suspected, and he transforms into a large creature. As they battle, we find out that Dove is still alive in another realm, building a resistance. We snap back to the present, where Dove has joined Hawk and Wave Rider touches her. Dove senses Wave Rider, they talk, and she allows him to touch her to see the future. We find Dove is in some kind of alien council as they talk about Monarch. Dove goes to Earth to face him. Back in Dove's mind space, she tells Wave Rider that with him skimming the time stream, he's disturbing the order of events. Dove touches Wave Rider and sees his origin, which we discussed back in Armageddon 2001, issue 1, months and months ago. Wave Rider breaks up, back in the time stream, then recovers, touches Dove again to see what will happen with her. We see Dove at Hawk's tomb as a small child rushes up to her, calling her mama. As the child runs up, Wave Rider switches through different futures as the child changes from boy to girl and back, and Dove's costume changes several times. Back in Dove's future, she's fighting Monarch and his peacemakers. After she loses them, she meets up with Hawk, Wren, which is Hawk's girlfriend, and Sal, her boyfriend. Dawn and Hank separate from their partners, and they carry the fight to Monarch. Wave Rider then touches both Hawk and Dove to see another feature of them. This time, a young lady, Dr. Ursula, rushes in to find a beaten Barter in his shop. Before Barter dies, he tells the young lady that she is the child of Hawk and Dove and gives her a sapphire and a vial of ink. One is the tool of order, the other essence of Kestrel, a Hawk and Dove foe. He also gives her a penny, which causes him to get reduced to ash. As Barter dies, his shop dies with him. Ursula then goes back to work as a medic and saves the life of someone that Monarch is interested in. Afterwards, she talks with Sal, the man she thought was her father. She tells him that Barter told her to remember Unity. Upon saying that name, she transforms into Unity, which is a cross between Dove and Hawk. At this point, the peacemakers burst in, and before they can hurt her dad, she lets them take her into custody so she can meet up with Monarch. Monarch pitches to her that they can be partners and friends as the two battle. Wave Rider pulls out, and he realizes that Unity could change the world, leaving Hawk and Dove to wonder what happened as the story ends. Now, for my thoughts on this, as usual, we will start with the cover. The cover, dead in the center, we have Monarch. He's got timelines, if you will, time energy, whatever it is, shooting. That looks like it coming out of his arms and a beam coming from behind him in front of him. He's like in a flying position. And it splits the page into four different panels. The top one, we have Monarch fighting the Hawk creature. Another panel, we have Hawk and Dove, a close-up of their faces. A bottom, we have a Peacekeeper shooting it. Okay, actually it's in three panels. It's divided into four, but the bottom two panels is one that's cut in half. So we have a Peacekeeper shooting at, I think it's Unity, because it looks like a cross between Hawk and Dove. So, and again, Wave Rider and his beams are in color, but the rest of it is in monochrome. Simon McGuire Nordway. I've got to say, this is a great cover. It says Hawk and Dove, Armageddon 2001, their futures revealed. I think this is a pretty good cover. I like that we show different aspects of what happens in the story. We get a good close-up shot of Wave Rider flying through time, if you will. Overall, it's a really solid cover. I don't know if it's quite worthy of a poster, but it's pretty close. On a scale of 1 to 5, I would give this probably a good solid 4. And let's ask my guest what he thinks. Oh, wait a minute, I don't have one today. Never mind. Going on with that. Actually, before I start my synopsis or my coverage of the actual issue, this story, Hawk and Dove Annual 2, looking at Mike's Amazing World of Comics, it looks like it came out right before issue 26 of Hawk and Dove. This came out June 4th, and Hawk and Dove number 26 came out June 25th. After this annual, there's only 3 issues left of the regular series before it was canceled. It was canceled issue 28. The last issue was Hawk and Dove, part of the War of the Gods storyline. But that's when it came out. But continuity-wise, I'm going to have to look at that and see, because... Well, yeah, I guess, because this annual happened, and then they finished off their book. And then after that... So, again, I'm just looking as we're talking here. The final issue came out August of 1991. Was the final issue of this series. And Armageddon 2001 came out September the 3rd of 1991. So their book was canceled just in time for Armageddon 2001 to finish, which we'll get to in a couple of months here. But back to this story. We start out the first page. We have Wave Rider flying through time. I like this. It says, another census-shattering chapter in the saga of Armageddon 2001. We get Wave Rider traveling through time, as I talked about. Again, the cover. The art on this is done by several different artists. Again, I'm not talented enough to tell you which artist did which page, like some of my fellow podcasters can. All I comment is my thoughts in the art. I'm assuming each, because he goes through, as I talked about, Hawk and Dove's futures a couple different times. So I'm assuming each look at their future is probably a different artist. But yes, we start out, bad thing I'll say, and the coloring is a little off. It looks like in here, on page 3, for instance, it looks like his hair's on fire compared to the cover where it's more of a yellow, more chronal energy. On the first page and the third page, when we see Monarch or Wave Rider, it looks like kind of like his hair's on fire, kind of like Firestorm type, but I don't know. I do like here on page 4 when he emerges with Hawk looking at his future. The top panel, we get half of Hawk's face, half of Wave Rider's face as he kind of merges into Hawk to see his future. And in this future, Hank Hall, he looks bigger than he normally does. He's a big, meaty guy. We find out that he's part of the Peacemaker. He's on off duty when these other Peacemakers come and bring him in for the captain to talk to him. And again, this artist, I'm not sure who it is offhand. If we're going in order, it's maybe Kurt Swan or... I'm not sure. Again, I wish I was a little better at telling who these artists are. But this artist tends to draw Monarch and or Hawk both beefier, wider than they normally are shown. So, again, if I was a little better at art, I could probably tell you. But yeah, we get Hank Hall starting out. He gets brought by the Peacekeepers. He forces the Peacekeepers to shoot him, which enables him to turn into Hawk. Because again, if you're familiar with Hawk and Dove series, Hawk and Dove could only turn into their alternate hero, or alternate identities, when they were in danger. And again, he's been retired for a while because he transforms. He's like, oh yeah, been a long time. And so he beats up these guards and he tears up a statue of Monarch, forcing Monarch to come down to fight him. And I was going to say something, but I better give a little warning. I'm assuming if you guys are listening to this podcast, you've already know the ending of this. I've been trying to avoid it if I can throughout, but again, to talk about this issue, I need to talk about the ending. So if you haven't read the entire series, you may want to read it. If you don't know what happens at the end and the controversy at the end of this, which we'll get into in a couple of issues or a couple episodes when I talk about the final issue of this. But here, Hawk's fighting Monarch, and a lot of people say, well, this proves that, because again, I keep stopping myself. Someone will come out and say at this point, if I think we may have mentioned it before or we've hinted at it, in the final issue, Armageddon 2001, issue 2, it's revealed that Hawk becomes Monarch. We'll talk more about that here when we get to Armageddon 2002. But I say that a lot of people say, use this issue to say, well, this is why Hawk couldn't have been Monarch, because they fight him right here. But something else, again, I'm going to mention it here. A lot of my final thoughts are going to come out in here, because this issue, while not the last issue of the series, does have a lot of... it has a lot of tie-ins to the final issue because of what happened at the end. And which we'll get into here, and I'll keep saying that. But a lot of people, like I said, because Monarch is revealed to be Hawk. We also wait this issue proves that change wasn't, that was a change, and it wasn't supposed to be Hawk. And we'll get into that later on again. But something I will be bringing up, and again, I keep hesitating because I'm not sure what to say right now, because some of this stuff's going to come up in the Armageddon 2001 issue 2, I'm sure. I haven't recorded that one yet, but I'm sure it's going to come up because that's a big part of it. And sorry, my thoughts aren't as coherent as they normally are. I said I didn't want to write down my thoughts per se on this because I tend to read those. And as a buddy of mine, Romero, got on to me for early episodes reading off my script. It sounds red. He likes it better when I come off the head and when I actually think of these things live, end quotes. So bear with me just half a second here. I'm trying to figure out the best way to say this. That the way the story runs, every time and next issue or next episode when I talk about Justice League Europe Annual, that'll come up in a more discussion. But every time he touches a hero, the future changes. And that's why he looks at, well, story-wise, that's why he looks at Superman three times, Batman twice, because when he touches them, their future changes, which means that at one point, maybe Superman was a monarch, but he had to touch him three more times because it could have changed and he could have become monarch. So the identity monarch, while we know metatextually that they did change Monarch's identity at the very last second due to issues we'll get into later, this story showing that Monarch fighting Hawk doesn't really prove that at one point Monarch doesn't become Hawk, or Hawk doesn't become Monarch, sorry, reverse that. Because, again, once he looks at this future of them fighting, as we've learned from previous issues, it probably won't come to pass. And someone else may be a monarch. It could be Hawk. So I'm going to go further off my thoughts on this, but I want to get that out sort of as I start fighting here. And again, it's a little rough right here because I never know how much to say because I was trying to keep this kind of spoilerish free, if you will. But again, this issue ties so heavily into the final issue of it and the change. So there's going to be a lot of crosstalk at this point. So Monarch, you know, talked about how he killed the rest of the heroes. Let me see here. When he shows up, he's like, so it's true. You didn't die the first time with the others, with Dove. And I like the dialogue in here. Hawk's like, us embodiments of chaos in order don't die that easy. One other chance? Come, Metalhead. Come and get me. And Hawk says that I wasn't hiding, I was learning. And then we see him, as I talked about in the synopsis, he transforms into a giant chaos hawk creature, if you will, who's like two or three times the size of Monarch. And so they start fighting, as I talked about during the synopsis. And while they're fighting, so here on page 16, we have a splash page of Monarch fighting the Hawk creature. And Hawk's like, I'll show you who's a monster. And Monarch's, do your worst. And this is a great, like I say, the color's not the greatest. Hawk's head, the color looks a little, I don't know, it's bleeding. I think part of the problem, problem in quotes, is around where his head and shoulder is red and the top most of his body is white. Most times they have like a black outline separating the colors. There's no outline separating the red from the white. So it looks like it's bleeding in incorrectly or something. But I think it's just the way it doesn't have the line work in there. Other than that, it's a great panel. Like I say, the Hawk creature, it's a huge, same color as Hawk. It's got a somewhat design of Hawk. He's got a long tail, cloven feet, it looks like. Some sort of mandibles or something coming off his shoulders, or it's normally his Hawk costume. You know, he's got like the feathers coming off of his costume here. It's like mandibles or something. And then here on page 19, Dove's hand draws an arc through the sky. It looks like that allows Hawk to jump through, and he changes back into regular Hawk. And he's talking to Dove, saying that Earth's no longer a home for them because it holds them back, and they'll bring them to their world in their terms to fight them. Well, we never see Devil on this page here on page 19. It's an interesting way it shows the bottom part of the page shows the Hawk creature progressing, slowly turning back into Hawk as it's separated into four panels. And Hawk is laying at, again, my thought is Dove's feet, but we don't see who it is. And then it switches back to present time where Dove is, you know, finding Hawk just standing there. And we find out that Dove can almost sense Monarch. Again, there's several people, Superman 1 that's been able to sense, can sense Monarch. And so Monarch realizes, you know, when Dove's there, he's like, well, there's no reason to assume he's a he. And again, we assume Monarch's a guy just the way he looks, but like other comics have shown, a woman could be padded to make it look like she's a he. So he touches Dove. And like here on page 20, another great splash page, Wave Rider and Dove are touching. And due to Dove's power, she's able to fight him off a little bit. And so we get a nice page of Dove and Monarch, Wave Rider touching each other and colors around them. It's just a really neat page. And he's in the orders everywhere. And at this point, he's able to talk to Dove and he sees all different incarnations of her. There are 6 incarnations of Dove. All oddly different looking. And Wave Rider's kind of taken back. He's like, all of you? Because he's just the first time he's seen something like this where he's seen multiple versions of people at one time. And Dove tells him, you know, the future has always been a spectrum of choices. Skimming through time, through lives, shouldn't be that clear to you. And you realize how powerful she is, and he's like, show me that you're not Monarch. So he touches her, and he sees that this future Dove's part of a council of aliens that's looking at Earth and Monarch that's ruling it. And Dove says that she'll go to Earth and fight Monarch. And as she goes, she says that he's already killed a part of me, which insinuates that he's killed Hawk. But again, this could kind of be, again, I know that Monarch originally wasn't Hawk, but they changed at the last minute. But kind of like in Star Wars, retroactively changing what she means here. Because in Star Wars, if you're familiar with the original Star Wars, they're later reading able to New Hope. Obi-Wan tells Luke that Darth Vader killed his father. And then we find out in the next movie, Empire Strikes Back, that Luke's father, Anakin, becomes Darth Vader. And so it could be the same thing here, again, retroactively speaking, that when Monarch became Hawk, he, in a sense, killed her partner. But also, as we'll get to in Armageddon 2001, issue number 2, how he becomes Monarch's a different story, but we'll get to that in a couple months. But so she goes off to fight, and we don't. And so he assumes that she's not Monarch in this reality, since they're looking at Monarch on Earth, and she's here with all these other aliens, and she's off to fight them. And Dove tells them that they're working hard to ensure some realities never occur, but with him traveling through time like he's done, it's kind of working against them. And she tells him this: by skimming through the time stream, you're disturbing the order of events. Like, why are you doing this to me? Who are you? What are you? And she touches Wave Rider, and she kind of takes on his abilities for a moment, and she can see his future, his past. And we get kind of a recap of his origins about from the first issue of Armageddon 2001, which we talked about oh so long ago. And I like here on page 40, where he says that a simple touch, my own power turns against me. Suddenly I'm reliving my own future or past. Time depends largely on perspective. And I remember before Wave Rider. So I got kind of, you know, it's his future, it's his past. It depends on your perspective. And I do like here at the bottom of page 24, that part I just read, the actual panel that those bubbles are over, dialogue balloons, whatever's over, it shows Matthew Rider, a.k.a. Wave Rider, and it's him standing there, his arms and legs akimbo, and the picture of him is split into like stripes, and part of it we see Wave Rider, part of it we see Matthew Rider, it's an interesting way to zoom from Wave Rider to Matthew Rider. And as I said a minute ago, we get, you know, his origins here from his point of view. He says that he was goaded, and he goaded the man inside the armor into a confrontation, or he convinced him to use him as experiments to control history through time, leading to my rebirth in the time stream as Wave Rider. Monarch had given me the power to find and stop him before he could exist, and I will. And here about page 25, where we see the creation of Wave Rider as he's flying through the time continuum, space-time continuum. A really nice panel. I really like the way that's drawn. And like I say, these panels here where he's in the wave, he's in the time stream, or he's fighting with Dove, like a power of wills. A lot of colors, a lot of bright primary colors on here. I like this. It's very nicely drawn. The art's on here is very nice. And as he's fighting with Will, as I said, he's got a power of the will with Dove. And it's tearing him apart. And he breaks up and goes back into the time stream. And so again, so he's able to use his own will to reform himself from the time stream. And he's still looking at Dove's futures. And here we see another future where Dove... And again, we haven't talked about it on this show, but in the Hawk and Dove series, they went to the, I think it was the Lands of Chaos and Order, something like that, I forget exactly. And we saw them without their costumes, without their Hawk and Dove costume, and we actually see what they look like, in this current series at least, without their costumes on. And they look very different. And we see that Dove here, kind of, she like circles around her eyes. And in this future, she's going to like a crystal palace. And Hawk, without the Hawk costume, so the Hawk avatar, whatever, however you want to phrase it, is laying in a coffin. Looks like it's a ruby encrusted or something, because he's got a red tint about him. I don't know if it's supposed to be a shell over the coffin, or if just in death he's turned red. I'm not sure. And, so here on page 28, Dove's visiting. Dove is visiting Hawk's grave. And then on page 29, we get five panels on this page where a young kid switching from looks like a boy to a girl, reddish brown hair to a blonde or white like her mom, long hair, shorter hair. Different images of the kid as it's changing through the different time streams. And Dove, her costume changes a little bit here and there. The way she looks changes with each panel. And I think this is going to be something I'm going to talk more about in a couple episodes when I talk about Armageddon 2001 issue 2. How when Wave Rider looks at a future for a hero, that future no longer exists. So these futures were Dove or Hawk's dad, different versions of children running up to their mom. It's very interesting. I said we'll come back to that. Put a pin in that for a couple episodes. We'll come back to this kind of. I'll probably talk about more here too, also. So, and I like this. So here on page 30, we get Dove holding up the child, and Wave Rider's taking the child. There's something I must see. I can't hold. Something's tearing me away. It's like William Shatner's narrating it. And like out of the cosmos, out of the time stream, it's caution, stranger. Beware of the forces you unleash. Order and chaos are not easily controlled. You which see my role in your future, observe. And so Dove face kind of forms out of the void, and we see Dove's face here at the bottom of page 30. Again, it's a really nice way to handle this issue. The art's very good. The dialogue, like I said, and a lot of people complain about this issue because, again, as we said, as we've talked about previously, and I've talked about earlier in this episode, that there was a change from who Monarch was supposed to be. And they cite this issue as the reason why when they changed it to, as I said earlier, I think they changed it to Hawk. And they're saying this issue shows it couldn't be because he looks at all these different futures. And none of them, it was Dove, or Hawk. In fact, Hawk fought him in some of the futures, so it couldn't be. But as we said earlier, and again, we'll touch on this in the last episode of this, since Wave Rider is looking at these futures, all these futures where it's not Hawk, they no longer can exist. So he kind of wipes out all these different possibilities of it not being Hawk, which widens the possibility that it actually was Hawk. But again, we'll talk more about that later. And then here on page 31, we're in another future where Dove is fighting Monarch. And he's looking for the child, looking for her son. And as she flies away, the Peacekeepers follow her. They do a little fighting here. And they land on a hospital where she turns back into Dawn Granger. And she meets up with her husband or boyfriend or whatever it is, Sal. And her partner, in quotes, Hank Hall, a.k.a. Hawk. And Hawk, or Hank's girlfriend, wife, whatever it is, Wren, who he was dating at the time in the books. And she lets Sal, I forget now if they're married or whatnot, that she ran into Monarch and he knows. And so she tells Sal after Hank gets Wren away from them, that it's time to go, that Hawk and Dove have to go fight Monarch, and that Sal and Wren need to watch over their child. But again, she doesn't come out and say that. Dialogues here are like, I mean, it's time, we've got to go. I mean, Hawk and Dove have to go. Hank knows, I can tell. Take Wren aside. You and she can keep my son safe. And Sal's like, then you're saying goodbye? Maybe. Not forever. Maybe just... He's like, hey, I knew the job was dangerous when I took it. Whatever happens, always be glad you chose me. And Wren's being, you know, whisper. How rude. Just kind of be, you know, snarky in a joking manner because they're friends. And they start to board. I'm not sure where they're going to. They're going to an elevator. And Hank and Dawn go into it first. And Hank kind of pushes Wren back out of the elevator as it closes. And Sal tells her that, you know, I promised. And Wren's kind of upset that she knows that they're going to go fight Monarch, but she didn't get a chance to say goodbye to Hawk or Hank. Because, again, this could be their last battle. And then here on page 36, we see Hawk and Dove, or Hank and Dawn, turning into Hawk and Dove. And they blast this wall or whatever it is, ready for battle. And just a great scene here where they're come busting through. There's glass shards as they're busting through and the Peacekeepers are shooting at them. Just a great image. I love this image of them busting through this wall or mirror or window or whatever it is. And Wave Rider's like, yes, no matter what the future, they fought him, never became him. And yet, didn't they always fail? And about this time, they're returning back to present, and Hawk's getting a little worried because Dove's kind of zoned out at this point. And again, he touches them both at the same time because Hawk walks through Wave Rider and grabs Dawn, so he's kind of touching them both at the same time at this point. So he sees another future, the combination of the two of them. And maybe just me, maybe, I don't know, this bottom of page 37, it's the same Hawk. Oh, just for a brief sec, he looked like a bit younger of a Hawk, but you can't really tell because he's got a costume on, so you can't see much of his face, but maybe just my eyes. But yeah, he looked like kind of like a younger version of Hawk for a minute there, a little not quite as present day, I don't know. But here on page 38, we see this gal come running in who I talked about during the synopsis, and we see Barter laying on the floor. Again, I love Barter. He's a great character. Barter showed up in the Hawk and Dove series. That's where I first saw him. I'm not sure where else he appeared. That may have been his limitations. I'll have to look into that. Anyways, but he travels dimensions and time and stuff, and he collects valuable things, and he trades one thing for another. Again, I may be covering Hawk and Dove either on this podcast or on its own podcast some point in the near future. Keep an eye on that. I'm still working out details. I'm not sure what to do at this point, how to handle it. I know next I'm going to work on the Power of the Atom, but anyways, that's for the future. Keep an eye on the Headcast Network for more on Hawk and Dove. But he says that Monarch paid him a visit, and Monarch's one that beat the living crap out of him. And we find out that this is Dr. Asala, which is Sal's last name, if I'm not mistaken, which is Don's boyfriend slash husband slash whatever. And at this point of our story on page 39, Barter tells her that, you know, he's got a story for her. She's about time she learns the truth. And she's like, well, I'll make you a deal. I'll take some of those wounds in exchange for it. And he's like, no, don't interrupt. He's like, many years ago, your mother did me a great service. In payment, I made a promise to her. I gave my word. I would help look after you, help guide your teaching, and pass along to you your legacy when you reach the proper age. And then she and your father fell to Monarch. Now I have my business is ruined, leaving only enough time to complete my most important transaction. He's like, this sounds like a fairy tale. And let me back up another half second where, again, people complained about this issue, this annual, saying that Hawk couldn't have became Monarch because this rules him out of all possibilities. I don't know about that. Because again, he says that she and your father fell to Monarch. Well, she believes her father at this point is Sal, but her real father, we're going to find out here in a minute, is actually Hank Hall, aka Hawk. And using a bit of Star Wars logic from A New Hope, the original Star Wars, when Obi-Wan tells Luke that Vader killed his father, when actually come to find out later that Anakin, Luke's father, became Vader, but in a way Vader did kill Anakin, it may be the same way here. I could read it that way, that a Dove and Hawk fell to Monarch. But he says, he's like, then she and your father, ... fell to Monarch. That could mean that maybe one of them became Monarch. So I don't... And again, I'm kind of retconning this because of what happened with the story. But reading this and using, like, say, some what I call Star Wars logic in this, this could say that the Hawk did become Monarch. And he tells her that, you know, this isn't a fairy tale. All wrongs will not be righted. The simple have happily ever after. But there is a magic word. There is one hope to stop the Mad King. And again, Barter knows that he's gone. He's done for. So he gives her, as I talked about in the synopsis, he pulls from his safe a couple items he has. He tells her here that, you know, she's the child of Hawk and Dove, and now it's time to take advantage of that auspicious birth. And yeah, so he gives her a sapphire and a vial of ink. And he says one's a tool of order, and the other is the essence of Kestrel. They're tools that'll trigger the transformation, that'll give her the power that's been locked inside her since birth. And then he gives her a penny, and apparently the penny is what's keeping him alive, because as soon as he hands that over to research aging, and like here at the bottom of page 43, he hands it to her, and he's like, my business is dead, and I am nothing without it. I suggest you leave quickly. Remember, unity. Unity! And this last panel here on page 43, as he's dying, he's aging, it shows him falling forward, getting older with each fall, until he's just a skeleton laying in the gal's arm. A very nice ending to Barter, I think. I do like the way that he just faded away, you know, turned into a skeleton because he was so old. And apparently the penny, I don't remember if they talked about that in the main series or where that came up at. But apparently the penny is what's keeping him alive all this time. And with Barter dead, the shop, his magic shop, starts falling apart. So she jumps out as the shop kind of implodes on itself. And we find out that she's working at a med center. And when she gets to work at the med center, there's a patient for her to work on. And she's keeping a guy that's pretty badly beaten up alive. And as she's working, Monarch approaches. And I like this. As she's working on him, there's a bunch of doctors and nurses or whatever around her. And they all of a sudden they start backing off. And she's like, are you something new to the trauma team world? And after she stabilizes him, she's... Because rest of her crew's kind of backed off. Because they don't see... They realize that behind her, while she's been working on this guy, Monarchs came in behind her. Like, hey, what's everyone's down looking stupid? People here need us. Let's get to work. This one's stabilized. Let's scoot down the line. Come on. And she turns and runs into Monarch. And she tells him that, you know, they need that one for interrogation. Apparently this guy tried to kill himself. But they were able to save him so they can find out what he's got going on. And as she leaves to work on the next patient, Monarch tells the peacekeepers, add that one to the list. She holds the potential for trouble. And he thinks to himself, and power, if I'm reading the signs right. So he can kind of tell what power she has in her, which we'll get to in just a minute here. And then she shows up and talks to her dad, who's, again, from earlier, Sal, Don Granger's boyfriend, possibly husband in this timeline. Sounds like. And she says that Barter's dead. He gave her these. Something about Hawk and Dove. And he's like, dead, huh? Always figured. How much did he tell you? And she's like, so I'm not yours? Mom really was a... What happened to them? And she's trying to inquire about the stuff that Barter gave her and what's going on. Sal tells her, you know, he can't say very much. The walls have ears, basically. And you never know who's listening. And I said, well, so what do I do with these? Barter said they were keys? And Sal's like, keys? I don't know. Your mother only had to say her name. Sort of a magic name. And his daughter's like, but I don't have a magic name. All Barter said was remember, unity. And she says unity here on the bottom of page 48, 49. She kind of transforms. And she's like, oh, I see now the light. Everything's so clear, so complex. Contradictory, complementary. All the parts making a whole chaos in order. Unity, that's who I am. Chaos and order, essence of each, power of both, loyalty to neither. Now I understand. And it's like I say, she's got kind of a Hawk and Dove costume combined into one. It's a really neat costume. And I guess he's like, how's about that? The arrangement's new, but it's the same old rock and roll. Of course, one thing's different. Hawk and Dove could only change when Ninja was near. And all of a sudden, the wall starts getting evaporated. She's like, no. That's still the same. And the wall just explodes as peacemakers come flying in. She's afraid her dad gets hurt, so she takes out the peacemakers. And she decides to surrender. She's like, we'll leave the man alone. I force him to help me. Lying to try to save her dad, of course. And of course, instead of fighting her way to Monarch, she wants to surrender so they'll take him to her, which they do. And I like this here on page 51. They take her prisoner, take him into her. And Monarch's like, so, the last of the meta. Captured quite easily, I hear. And all of a sudden, she like snaps the chain. She's like, appearances can be deceiving. Mine are. She's like, I'm no threat to you, Monarch. In fact, I've come to help. I know the root and the solution to your pain. If you just send your troops away, we could talk. So again, as any megalomaniac does, someone thinks they have the answer for him. He's going to follow up on it. He's like, go, leave us alone. He then takes her to his space station, I guess it is. And as they're talking, she's like, Monarch's like, yes, and no one else can. I've been alone for so long. I could use a friend, a partner. And Unity's like, Monarch and Unity? No, I think we're a little too independent for that to work. I'm sure I put a few new ideas into your head. Liberties must be checked by laws, and iron fists balanced by an open mind. Order working with chaos. My parents, Hawk and Dove, knew that. Before you killed them. And she jumps on him. He's like, no, stop. You're the last one like me. Don't make me destroy you, too. And she's like, no one's going to die, Monarch. But don't you agree with my worldview, do you? Luckily, I'm a terrific neurosurgeon. And these talents can slice through anything. But between my skills and powers, I think I can change your mind. So again, so she leaps on Monarch and she uses her claws and somehow she's going to, I think, I'm curious what you guys think about this. I'm thinking she's going to use her, from the way it reads, she's going to restructure his brain so he's not quite so megalomaniac. And like I said, he does need to rule with an iron fist, but he needs to keep an open mind. I don't know. But I haven't seen anything in this last story that says that it's not Hawk. So I'm wondering, again, retroactively, because again, I know originally it was supposed to be Captain Atom, but they changed it to Hawk. And I've been pushing a foot around that for this entire last year or so that I've been doing this mini series, but it's kind of hard not to talk about the ending with this book since it ties so heavily into it because of what happens. In the last page is a splash page of Wave Rider things like, that child could change everything. My world, my time might be a golden age. Unity, their child. So close, but only as long as they remain so. So he said they have to remain together for Unity, but now that he's seen this future, as we know from previous issues, it's not going to happen now that he's read this. In fact, she could become a new monarch, or it's hard to tell what could happen at this point. Almost anything could. And then the story ends with Hawk and Dove on the splash page. What happened? Dove's like, something, I think, in time, we'll know. And it ends saying, Wave Rider's Quest and the Armageddon 2001 Saga continues wherever DC Comics annuals are on sale. So I say, very few of the books actually tells you which book to read next. It's just, read the next Armageddon 2001. But again, I enjoyed that annual. I enjoyed the Hawk and Dove series. It was great art, great writing, in my opinion. Using my Star Wars logic and retconning, and what we're going to find out, we'll talk more about this in the final episode, as I've said before, and I'll say it again. But I don't know as if this really rules out Hawk from being Monarch. And again, we'll talk more about that. I don't want to get too much into that here because, again, that's for my final episode of this. So I think I'm going to end this here. Like I said, it's another great book. Some of the books don't tie in as closely to the Monarch. Some are completely detached except for the Wave Rider popping in and out. But this book, in my opinion, is a great tie-in issue because it does feature heavily with Monarch appearing in this book. It's not just another story that they slid a couple pages of Monarch Wave Rider in to fit the series, or the Armageddon 2001 crossover, which a lot of the books came across that way. The Flash is one, for instance. While it was a good story, it didn't really have anything Monarch didn't appear in there. It was just a future look at Barry, or Wally. But I'm in this here. Hold on, and I may play a promo, and we'll see what happens. Hold tight, kids.
Head Speaks will be back after these important messages.
Hello, Paul. Hello, I am Dr. Herfenstaffner. Come in, please. Take a seat. What can I do for you today?
I can't sleep. I can't focus on anything. The only thing I can think about is, like, DC events.
DC events? As in the comic books? DC events?
Yes. The comic book events.
Ooh, interesting. Are we talking things like Crisis on Infinite Earths?
Yeah, totally. That one, yeah.
Infinite Crisis?
Yeah, that one too.
Oh, very, very. Invasion, maybe?
Yeah, definitely.
The Genesis?
Not so much.
No? Okay, well, I think it's really good if you talk about the things that are troubling you in your life. So maybe you should do a podcast about this obsession.
What do you call this obsession? What do you think it is?
I think you're a unique case. I've not seen anything like this before in my office. I'm going to suggest that you have what we call DC OCD.
What? DC OCD.
You are obsessive and compulsive about your DC events. I think you should talk it out, get it out of your system via a podcast. I will help you, my friend. We shall do a podcast together about your DC OCD.
Oh, okay.
When I won't even start? Charge you for it.
Awesome. I don't think I can claim you on benefits.
Yeah, it's good.
When should we start?
I'll get back to you on that. I'll check my timetable.
Cool.
Attention all personnel. New from the Fire and Water Podcast Network, it's MASHcast. Hosted by MASH mega fan Rob Kelly and a rotating cast of VIPs, MASHcast analyzes episode by episode the greatest television series of all time, MASH. Find MASHcast on fireandwaterpodcast.com.
Jocularity, Transformers!
You are receiving a transmission from the Rod Pod. Upload pending.
Stand by for soundtrack transfer.
I am Maggie.
And I am John.
And we are trapped, hurtling through space in a ship shaped like Rodimus's head.
The ship, for reasons we haven't been able to determine, contains the entire run of the IDW Transformers Phase 2 comic, which chronicle the events following the end of the war between the Autobots and Decepticons. So we figure we may as well read them all in order and report our findings to you.
Stand by. Stand by.
Upload complete. Now.
The Rod Pod. Look for us at marriedwcomics.libsyn.com, at iTunes, at Stitcher, or wherever good podcasts can be found.
So, till all are one.
Till all are one.
Till all are one.
And now back to Head Speaks.
Welcome back to Head Speaks. Hope you enjoy those promos and check out those shows. Now, moving on to the next segment for today, here he presents... With Head. So a few months ago, I presented to you my comic book movies for DC Comics, the order that I, my preference, if you will. And I talked a little bit about each of the movies. Just to recap, starting off the top of the list, my favorite movie at that point was Aquaman, followed by Wonder Woman, followed by Justice League, followed by Batman vs. Superman, The Dawn of Justice, followed by Man of Steel, and ending up with Suicide Squad. Well, since that time, one more DC movies came out, and it is Shazam.
Shazam!
So I figured since the movies came out, I'm not sure when the next DC movie is going to be. It's going to be The Joker, I think, which I've got issues with, but we'll get to that another time. So I figured I'd do a quick update on my DC movie list. So I read off the list as previously, and it's easy to adapt to this list. In the top number one slot, I'm sliding everything down one slot, and in my opinion, in the top slot is Shazam. Or as I prefer to call him, Captain Marvel. The real Captain Marvel. But yes, and so far in my... And again, as I've said before, this list could change at a moment's notice. It's my list. I'm free to do what I want. But as of right now, Shazam is in the top spot for DC movies out as far as the current DC cinematic universe. Shazam, let's talk about Shazam a little bit. The bad points, a couple of things I didn't care for. I don't care for the costume with the big bulky lightning bolt like they did on it. I don't care for the light-up lightning bolt like they're doing in the comics right now and they did in the movie. I just don't care for that. I prefer the older costume with the lightning bolts made of fabric. It doesn't light up. That's just me. The other thing I didn't care for is the extended Shazam family. I mean, before there's always been Captain Marvel Jr. and Mary Marvel, and they've had Dudley and the Lieutenants, but I haven't read very many, if anything, with the Lieutenants in it. There's like three or four other Marvels. Hillbilly Marvel, and I forget the names of them offhand. But to me, it's been just the main three, and then Uncle Dudley is a powerless member of the team, if you will. In here, they're following the current DC Comics version of Captain Marvel, where he shares his power with his adopted family, foster family. I guess it's foster family. And so it's like six or seven people are using the Shazam powers. I don't care for all the... Again, I'm not a big fan of kids in my movies, I guess. I don't know. It's hard to explain, but I don't care for all these kids having the Shazam power. I think it kind of dilutes it a little bit. And I'd rather just have Captain Marvel with maybe Mary and Freddy, a.k.a. Captain Marvel Jr. Now, having said that, I thought the movie was awesome. Awesome. I thought all the kids, when they eventually got powers at the end, again, this is going to be spoilers for the Shazam movie if you haven't figured that out yet. So you may want to skip ahead a little bit. Check the show notes. It should be in there. But going on, near the end of the movie, all these kids get the power. And that was really neat. I love the way they fought the Seven Sins. It was a really neat battle. And while I'm not a fan of having the kids all have the powers, it was really cool. I thought that Zachary Levi did a great job as Captain Marvel. I don't care for the current incarnation of Billy, who's a bit more of a punk. He comes across more of a punk than the original Billy to me. I don't care much for that. That's another kind of negative for it. But I thought both the actors, the kid that did the Billy, who is from, he's from some show, Andy Mack, my daughter used to watch. I thought he did a great job. Zachary Levi, I said, did a great job. Mark Strong as Savannah. I grew up with the Captain Marvel from the 70s and 80s, where Savannah was an older man, short, bespectacled, and a scientist, but kind of odd-looking, kind of weird. In the modern Shazam comics, they've made him a bit younger. He's still got the bald head. He's got a monocle, if I'm not mistaken. He's got a glass eye or a power of fire or something. I forget exactly what it is in the comic now, but they've changed him a little bit. And Mark Strong played that version of Savannah. Like I say, just because I'm an old man, get off my lawn, we're going to yell some clouds. I prefer the original Savannah, what I call original, the older guy, short, and I don't know. But Mark Strong did an excellent job. I thought Savannah did a great job. What was his name? John Glover? Played Savannah's dad in here. Great. But yeah, I thought, again, we had a brief appearance from Mr. Mind, if I'm not mistaken. Just fantastic. It was a great movie. I thought it was, well, I say maybe not perfect. There probably would have been some things, if I watched it again, I would probably make some changes to if I had the option, the ability to. But overall, I thought they did a great job with Shazam. I want to call it Captain Marvel. I thought Shazam was a great movie. The only problem, again, besides what I mentioned, is the whole name thing. And that's kind of DC's fault for suing Fawcett, because Captain Marvel was similar to Superman, so they sued him so they couldn't use him. He went out of existence, kind of. They didn't use him for a while. And at that point, Marvel created their Captain Marvel. So the name thing's a bit wonky. That's DC's fault entirely. I blame them.
but I thought that, yeah, great movie. The special effects are great. I love that he fought the seven deadly sins. A lot of use of magic. The lightning bolts being thrown around. It's overall, I want to see that. I need to buy that. I need to watch that again. That was a great movie. I really enjoyed Shazam. In fact, yes, that's so far, that's been the highlight of the DC films. Again, not that it's a high bar, because a lot of the films haven't been that great, in my opinion. But I thoroughly enjoyed it. Like I say, Zachary Levi did a great job. Other than a few minor complaints, I didn't care for the plastic-looking lightning bolt on his costume. I prefer it had been fabric. But they're following the current comics, so... He played, you know, like a kid had all of a sudden turned to an adult and has all these powers. I love when him and Freddy was testing the powers out, see what powers he had. Just fantastic. It was some great scenes. If you haven't seen Shazam yet, you're missing out. Go out and rent it, buy it, watch Shazam. This is a great, in my opinion, the best DC movie so far. And like I say, it was just a quick update. I had to add Shazam in there as the number one movie. My brief thoughts on it. I'm not going to take another break because it's only been a few minutes, but we're going to play our next segment.
Mail time.
Mail time.
Mail time.
Mail time.
Mail's here.
Here's the mail. It never fails. It makes me want to wag my tail. When it comes, I want to wail.
You've got mail.
Yes, the long-awaited return of What's in Head's Mailbag. Or am I just calling it Head's Mailbag? It's been a while. Anyways, this is Head's Mailbag. It's been a while since I've had anything to talk about. No one's left any comments, reviews, or anything. So I haven't been doing this segment. In fact, I got lucky. It's probably been over a year since I've done this, I think. So, but I'm here because I actually have something to report finally. I appreciate anything I get from people. I love hearing about people talk about the show. Thank you guys. So let's get started on this. So in this week's episode of this month's Head's Mailbag, first up, there's a couple of things. First up, we have an iTunes review. Yes, an iTunes review. We haven't had one of these in a while. This came from MikeZ33. On June the 14th, Mike gave us 5 stars. And Mike's comment was, Armageddon 2001 is an underrated nostalgic classic. I discovered the podcast last week due to a Fire and Water Network comment on the recent Who's Who. While the series has its flaws, there are some nuggets of greatness in there. I look forward to your take on each one. Mike Z. Well, thanks, Mike. I agree that, again, while the series does have its flaws, which I've been talking about, we'll talk more about later, there are some nuggets of greatness in there. I definitely agree with that. And I guess I need to give a big thanks to the Fire and Water Network Who's Who podcast for you hearing this on, because otherwise you may have missed the show. So thanks for joining us, Mike. Thank you for the review. I love getting reviews. I prefer 5 stars, but I'll take what I can get. So the other people out there listening, be like Mike. Leave me an iTunes review or Stitcher or wherever you get your podcast from, and I'll read it on the air. Moving on, there was also Facebook shares and likes again. It's a short list. This is from over the last year. Not a whole lot to share, but I'm going to read off what I have. There's no particular order. I'm going to read off a list of names, so bear with me. We're going to start with our newest one, which I'm assuming is MikeZ33. It's Mike Zamzowski. Sorry if I messed it up, Mike. Let me know if I did it wrong. Mike Zamzowski is how I'm going to pronounce it. There's History of Comics on Film. The Fanholes Podcast, that's our buddy Derek William Crabb. Speaking of which, there's also Derek William Crabb on here. Susan Sturgeon, well, stumbled over that name, and I know her. She was with me. Susan's got a special place in my heart in my podcasting career because she's the one that took me to see the Jay and Silent Bob's Groovy Cartoon Movie where they did the episode of Jay and Bob Get Old, where Kevin Smith told everyone there to go out and start a podcast. So thanks, Sue. You got me into this. You're one of the ones that got me into this. moving on, there's Diablo Idlehead. Amanda Downing, who's a... Amanda Downing, who is a friend of mine in real life. We worked together. Oh, we used to work together. She's moved on, but knows her entirely. Thanks. Hi, Amanda. Jonathan Schaefer-Hames, who's been a previous guest and will be a future guest on this show. Yolanda Lamas, which is another friend from real life. Ray C. Hatley, another friend of mine from real life. The Just League International Bwahaha Podcast. McMiro Cano, which is another real life friend of mine. Pat Sampson, who is on my G.I. Joe or Real American Headcast show, and he has his own podcasting network. Great shows. Check him out. Hey, Pat. Michael Mott, International Podcast Day, and Michael Curran. I know it wasn't a lot, but that's what it is. Help me out and like and share and retweet and everything else, and maybe I can start doing this segment again more often. Also on Facebook, there was a comment from a Mr. Mike Zamzowski. He says, I'm loving the Armageddon 2001 coverage. It's a sweet, elegant mess of an event with some issues better than others, but your coverage is solid on them all. Great nostalgic trip. Well, once again, Mike left us a comment there. He left us on the iTunes review. Thank you very much, Mike Zamzowski. Let me know how badly I'm butchering your name, buddy. But you are my favorite listener because, well, you left me two different reviews in two different places. The review plus the comment here on Facebook. So I really appreciate that. And if you want to be like Mike...
Like Mike. If I could be like Mike.
As I say, if you want to be like Mike, go ahead and leave us a review on iTunes or wherever you get your podcast from. Join us over on Facebook. You can look for Head Speaks or the Headcast Network or any of my shows. Leave us a comment there. I'll read it on the air. Give us a like, a share, a mention, whatever. I love you guys. I appreciate everything you guys have done for me. I love doing the show. But that's going to end it here, I think. We got his mailbag. That finishes things up. So be sure to join us next month for our 50th episode. As we take a look at Armageddon 2001, the Justice League Europe annual, with a couple of special guests. And whatever else I decide I can cram in that episode. But yes, be sure to join us. I may do a new segment. Well, actually not a new segment, but a revamped old segment. Join us. Also join us for the Cross the Network with my other shows. I have G.I. Joe, a Real American Headcast, where I look at the G.I. Joe comic. That should be out next week. The following week is Task Force X, where I look at the Suicide Squad and the Checkmate comics from the late 80s, early 90s. And then the fourth week of the month, I have two episodes out. I have the Starman Manhunter Adventure Hour, where I'm looking at the Starman comic from the late 80s, early 90s. I've already finished the Manhunter portion. Still debating how to handle the other Manhunter series. Want to cover that or not? Let me know what you think. But also that week, I also have Bravo Team, where I look at something else G.I. Joe related that's not tied into the main series or the original cartoon. So join us and let me know what you guys think. I guess that's going to do it for today. We'll talk to you guys next time. Until then, remember, Ed has spoken. Thank you for listening to another fantastic episode of Head Speaks. Hope you enjoyed it. If so, let me know. Drop me an email to head@headspeaks.com or visit our home at head.headspeaks.com. You can also visit and talk with me on Facebook and Google+, both under Head Speaks. You can also send an MP3 file with your thoughts and I can play that on the air. And you can also get more of me on my other podcasts. Be sure to listen to Task Force X, where monthly I look at John Ostringer's Suicide Squad and Paul Kupperberg's Checkmate comics from the 80s and early 90s.
Also over on G.I. Joe, a Real American Headcast, my podcasting friends, Ryan Daly and Kyle Benning, along with myself, are looking at all of the G.I. Joe, a Real American Hero comics and related titles from Marvel and IDW. All of my headcasts are available on iTunes and Stitcher, along with the respective blogs and my main page at headspeaks.com. All comments, thoughts, and opinions expressed on Head Speaks are owned wholly by the speaker of said comments and do not express the opinions of Head Speaks, unless, of course, I'm the one making the comments. Head Speaks, Task Force X, and G.I. Joe, Real American Headcast, are all part of the Headcast family. So join us next month for another wonderful episode of Head Speaks. Until then, I'll see you in the funny pages. Good night.